You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Kyle, for those who haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name is Kyle McCormick. I'm a pharmacist out of Pittsburgh, PA. And the reason we're talking today is because we have a cost-plus model, cash-only, insurance-free pharmacy. From what I can gather, it's kind of the only model that's exactly like ours nationwide. I know there are other cash-only pharmacies, insurance-free pharmacies, but we pair a membership model with ours. And I know that there's also membership pharmacies, but a lot of those only exist as membership-only or, you know, non-membership-only. So we kind of melded everything into one.
When you start positioning your pharmacy, you start saying, hey, I might be this only person because they have this and they have that and so on. So break that down a little bit more for the listeners. Well, frankly, I always blame it on the listeners. Break it down for me.
Those listeners, they have a lot of questions.
A lot of goofy questions. All right. So you are cash only.
Yes.
No insurance.
Correct.
And there's some pharmacies that are like that.
Correct.
Not a ton, probably.
Right.
But some.
Yeah.
And then there's also a set of pharmacies that are, what do you call it?
Not membership. Yeah, membership.
Right. Membership.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
There's some that are membership only maybe.
Mm-hmm.
What is your crossover? Tell me again, what's your subset then that makes you very unique?
Yeah, so maybe I'll provide a little background into why I came up with the model, and hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, for sure.
How we're different. So, looking at pharmacy, I've always wanted to own my own pharmacy, but I realized, you know, I saw two out of the four pharmacies that I worked at close because of under reimbursement. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that I couldn't do a traditional pharmacy. And so knowing that I wanted to open something and, you know, looking at the landscape of pharmacy, I decided, well, why even accept insurance? It seems to be, I mean, I'm on the Facebook group like everybody else. It seems to be.
Yeah.
The common problem.
So, right. So exactly.
Why even bother accepting it? Because 90% of all medications are generic now. And the U.S. actually has, don't quote me on this. I mean,
I won't quote you. We're rough. As long as you're in the right 50%.
I heard it on a podcast. It might even be your podcast. So I'll quote
my gosh. If I'm being quoted, that's like that game operator. You know, people are in a heap load of trouble. If you're between 0 and 50% and you say any number in there, you're correct. And if between a 50 and 100, any number is correct, we just go either side of that 50% mark. So,
well, I heard once on a podcast
from a wise old sage.
Yes, that the U.S. has the world's lowest generic drug prices. Acquisition. Not necessarily resell. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I heard that. It's because of the market for generic market. And so knowing that 90% of generics or 90% of all prescribed medications are generic and that the U.S. has some of the lowest generic drug prices, I was like, why not just open up a pharmacy where patients pay directly? And working through, well, I wanted it to be cost plus, not coming up with pricing schemes based on which medication it is and typical quantities. I wanted it to be truly cost plus.
What does that mean? Because I hear people saying that, because when it's not cost plus, you have people that are maybe trying to group things or being creative more.
Yeah.
This is truly like, here's the cost plus. Is that what it is? It's just standard versus like groupings or?
Yeah. So cost plus for me, and there's different cost pluses like you're saying, actually.
Sure.
Cost plus for me is truly what it sounds like. I view the cost of the medication as my acquisition cost, a small markup to account for credit card fees, stuff like that. And then I add 19 cents to that to cover the cost of the e-script, because it just bugs me that it costs 20 cents every single e-script. And then I was trying to determine, well, what is that margin that I want to cover? You know, the labor, the bottle. What does that need to be? So I did some calculations and came up with the average cost to dispense is $10. And for you, you might know that exact number, $10.49, something like that, is the nationwide average cost to dispense. And I said, well, my cost to dispense has to be lower. I'm the single employee. I don't have to spend all day on a phone with insurance companies. I don't have to submit claims, so I don't have claim fees. I don't have all the different fees. I don't have audits. So it has to be lower than 1049. I don't know truly what it is. I've done calculations to figure out, you know, if I had a robot next to me and counting everything, and if I could just check things, fill prescriptions, things like that, how many could I do an hour and what would that be? So I have those kind of ideas of what it would be. But just knowing that the nationwide average cost of dispense was $10.49 and knowing mine would be less, I figured, well, why not make my cost plus be $10?
Sure.
And so the other thing I wanted to keep in mind, though, is, and that's my monthly cost plus. So if it's a 90-day supply, it is cost plus 15.
Mm.
So the other thing I wanted to keep in mind is if somebody is on, like just yesterday, I had a 16-med profile that got sent to me. If somebody's on 16 medications at $10 plus for each medication, that's $160 a month. And this person does want to do monthly just because of the cost.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I realized that it doesn't take me that much extra time to, especially once after new medications take longer, but refills don't take longer. Typically, you're just verifying the product, making sure there aren't any changes in a profile. If you've already done a DUR the first time, there really shouldn't be that much more work that goes into it. So knowing that each additional medication doesn't add the same amount of time.
Sure.
And so it didn't make sense to charge the same amount per prescription. So in going and looking back on that model and realizing, well, I don't want to just do cost plus. I also want to have a membership so that patients that are on two, three more medications, they have a medication management fee. That is their monthly membership fee. And then we lower their cost plus because we should still charge for utilization. I can't just do membership and you get everything at cost or something.
Sure.
Because there's still, if somebody is on 16 medications, it does take me more time. I have to do more management. And so I still wanted to have an amount tied to that, but I didn't want it to be, it just wanted to cover the cost, the true cost of dispensing, not necessarily the cost to manage a patient's profile.
Gotcha.
Which would be it. So that's where I came up with the membership fee too. The membership is a monthly medication management fee. That's what I call it.
Sure.
So a patient is just a membership fee.
Yeah.
And I think that in the long run, I want them to view it as that's what they're paying me to manage their medications.
That's great.
Right now, it just looks like, to them, it's just like, this is a way to lower my cost of medication.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, if it can do both, great, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. In the long run, I want to prove the value of the pharmacist and have the view that, oh, even if I ever go down to just one medication, I still don't mind paying a membership or medication management fee because I know he's looking out for me.
Yeah.
So to answer your original question, what makes us different is that medication management fee. And then also still tied to a prescription dispensing fee or cost plus accounts for utilization. So if we have a high utilizer, they're still paying more compared to another member, but it also then doesn't penalize somebody for being or having multiple conditions because we're not charging them a full $10 per prescription. They actually do save a ton if they're a member because even if they're on 16 medications, say it's a, you know, 16 times three, and then add on their monthly fee, that's how, you know, still making a decent bit every month.
Let me make sure I got this, because all that stuff you're saying, it sounds like a great plan. I just want to try in my head to find out what would be not a cost plus arrangement.
It's like charging $8 a pill for sildenafil whenever it doesn't take any more time or money to dispense sildenafil. It's just a drug that people commonly have to pay cash for because it's not covered by insurance.
The non-cost plus is more like market rate. What can you get for this? It's like a gas station maybe selling milk. One gas station may be selling milk for $7 a gallon because they know they're not going to get the extra traffic. Another gas station maybe sells it for $1.49 because they know they're going to manipulate this and not manipulate in a bad way, but just bring people in. It's a loss leader and those kind of things. So what you're saying is you're not going on market stimulation so much. You're going on really what's a drug, what's my markup, and we'll let everybody else play the games of we're giving you a great deal because we're less than this chain store. It's like, well, no, it's not a great deal. It's a great deal compared to them, but everybody's priced higher because they know that it's a highly sought after medicine and people are willing to pay more, that kind of stuff. So it keeps it in line more.
Exactly. And it's also, to me, it aligns more with what, as pharmacists, we should be fighting for is the service. And so if you price something arbitrarily based on the going market rate, you know that my Ajanta sildenafil is the same exact as your Ajanta. It's not actually the drug that's different. So if you were saying, you know, I've got premium milk or something like that, then it drives, you could argue for a better price. For me, I don't care what drug it is, brand, generic, highly sought after. It takes me the same amount, for the most part, the same amount of time and effort and, you know, dispensing supplies to dispense one drug compared to another. And so it's that service that they're paying for by that marking it up.
And arguably, it's not like these drugs are a huge different investment or they're hard for you to procure. I can see if something costs a lot more and you had to have it on the shelf or you had to find it or you had to do something. But basically, they're all fairly low cost, fairly easy to get, about the same amount of effort goes into it. But if not, that's where you can make some reflections on that. You can say, well, look, for this class, it's higher. Maybe someday you'll have a new class of medicine where you say, these are still cheap. They take a lot more time. In fact, they take so much time that I'm not going to spread that out amongst all of my customers. I'm going to charge this group a little bit more. That's where you can do that, though.
Yeah. And a great example of that is something I already do. It's controlled substances.
Oh, right.
And it's twofold. It's one, you don't want to sell those so cheap that they, you know, that they become sought after. But the other thing is it does take more time. There's a requirement to check PMP.
Yeah.
There's a due diligence with those prescriptions. So that's already a class of medications that I charge a higher cost plus because it takes more time, more pharmacist time. There's a greater service involved.
Yeah.
And so I view it all as the cost of the service and not so much which drug am I filling.
Frankly, there's some follow-up stuff with controlled drug too. You know, whether it's audits down the road from the DEA or doing this or doing that. They're just more involved with that.
Exactly.
Kyle, so here's the question then. Should people continue to listen to our conversation here because this is maybe panning out for you? Or do we know enough now to say this isn't working and let's close this conversation down and make this podcast just 15 minutes long and interview somebody else? I'm guessing that you're having some success.
Yes. I mean, I'm not paying myself yet, so there's that piece, but
you're living.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So I would say starting something completely new, all indication that is that it's a success. So,
wow, that's great.
So something that's really not been done before. I think that, just this past couple of weeks has been, you know, pretty busy. So,
and I know you're doing okay because you had enough money at least to buy that blueberry paint for the back wall.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Everything in here is blue.
Because you're Blueberry
Pharmacy.
Pharmacy.
Yeah.
Right. Not Blueberry Hill, just Blueberry Pharmacy.
A lot of people think Blueberry Hill. Like, is it blueberryhill.com? I'm like, no.
No, it's blueberry. You don't have to tell me where the damn fruit is grown. It's just the fruit.
It's just the fruit. Yeah.
I always think of blueberries as more like purple or black in my head, but they're not. They're blue, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. They're definitely darker.
Oh, they're darker than your color?
Yeah. Yeah. Blueberries are typically like a dark blue or purple.
Well, mine are purplish with white freezer burn on them.
There you go. Frozen blueberries. You know, they're good to eat.
But you bring out the blue in the blueberry.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So Kyle, so
I'm surprised you haven't asked me yet how I came up with the name Blueberry Pharmacy.
Everybody's going to ask that. If you covered it somewhere else, we're not going there. I got more important stuff to ask you.
Okay. Let's go. Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about your height later too. And I'm going to tell you why I'm going to.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not going to give that away now. What are some of those indications that you say? And a lot of times it's just kind of like intuition. What are some of those intuitions that you kind of say, you kind of nod a little bit and say, hey, this might work. You talked about that maybe being a little busy or something. What are some signs like in your own head, not metrics necessarily, but you probably have something that you just kind of say, yeah, this kind of gives me a feeling of this. Have you had those feelings? And obviously you have had some, you just mentioned that, but tell me a little bit more about those feelings. What were those and what did you see that gave you like, this might go places for me?
Multiple reasons. The first is that it just feels like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So, and especially as I tell other pharmacists, other pharmacy students about the model, it just feels like the future of pharmacy, retail pharmacy. Especially, again, I'm going to reference your podcast, the episode with Robert Popovian.
I already said, fair. As long as you quote one of my guests and not me, we're still doing okay.
Yeah, the previous quote was your guest too. I mean, I'm willing to quote your guest.
Oh, shoot. I was doing a nice big humble brag and now you didn't even quote me yet. All right, carry on.
No, a friend sent the episode with Robert Popovian and said, you have to listen to this podcast at minute 49. He describes your business model, like exactly your business model.
He might have been looking at you, right?
I don't think so, because I actually followed up with him afterwards and I said, hey, great episode. Would love to talk to you. You know, I'm doing this exact thing that you described. Hey. And so we had a conversation. It was a really great conversation. But essentially what he describes, and it's interesting because it's kind of what I felt, but I, even in my business plan, I didn't describe it the way he had described or the way I've come to sense, feel about the future of pharmacy, is that knowing some of the statistics, 90% of medications are generic. The most new medications are specialty monoclonal antibodies, ridiculously priced medications. And so it's only going to divide further. In terms of everything that's going to be done retail is basically going to be generic in the future. And knowing that also, supposedly, according to a podcast guest.
You know what I have to do? I have to be a guest on somebody's podcast so I could be quoted.
There you go. The U.S. has the world's lowest generic drug prices. Knowing those two factors, why are we ensuring... And I think this it might be quoting you, is you don't charge your insurance for your gas in your car.
Yeah.
And so similarly, we know as pharmacists, independent owners, that most medications on our shelves cost between a penny and 10 cents per tablet. That's not something you buy insurance for.
Right.
If you buy insurance for it, you're guaranteed that it costs more versus just paying right outright. A penny. They can't bring that down without adding cost to it.
You've got all the intrinsic costs of switching fees, computers, and all that kind of stuff. But then on top of that, you've got multi-million dollar salaries of anybody who really has their hand in this. So there's no way they can do it cheaper.
No way. We'll get into mail order probably too, but I don't see the future of generic pharmacy being mail order. So I see retail pharmacy being the location for generics and it being a completely carved out benefit where it's a direct generic market, kind of like how Robert Popovian was describing, because it is just something you would not buy insurance for. It's a known low cost. You buy insurance for life insurance, car insurance, homeowner's insurance, health insurance, because those are high cost unknowns versus a blood pressure medication, Lipitor.
Right.
Things that are pennies. So, and to your point about driving up cost, it's guaranteed to be driven up because you have to have a call center to answer questions. You have to have high salaried people. You have to have switch fees. You have to have audits. You have to have all the things that add cost. And we see this at the pharmacy level too. It's not just like it adds cost to the patients. It adds cost to running a pharmacy.
For sure.
Right. I have to pay for all those claim fees, all those switch fees, all the I don't have to pay for them, but a traditional pharmacy has to pay for them. They have to have staff to answer, to call insurances all day. They have to do prior authorizations. And as the future of pharmacy moves towards more generics, that's not going to be the case. And so the idea is, Eric and Antonio out of 46 Brooklyn, I was on a call with them and they were like, so you're essentially doing what a PBM is supposed to do. And that's kind of like the idea of my model is we help patients, not just with their generic medications, we help them with their brands, but we do so by not filling them. And so I know that's kind of the trend in pharmacy, just listening to the, you know, reading the pharmacy Facebook groups is saying, you know, I have to send this patient away because we're losing too much on brand. I look at that as an opportunity to help the patient because likely they're paying too much for their brand name medication too. And so even though I can't fill it.
Because of its nature, because it is brand.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of ways to bring down costs of brand name medications. And so that's where I help patients, and I actually charge consult fees, cost consultation fees. And so whenever I help somebody with their brand name medication, just this morning I had a consult with a doctor to help a patient who's a type 1 diabetic being put on insulin. And so I am not going to be billing that medication here, but this patient's going to get a basal insulin for $35. And so I'm just charging a consultation fee for helping the doctor and the patient, you know, lower the cost.
They're going to get it because of coupons you helped find, or coupons, probably a cheap word. Is there a fancier word for that?
No, this one is exactly that. It's a coupon. So what I do is I help patients navigate the costs. So, you know, whether it's signing them up for manufacturer assistance programs, just coupon navigation, looking at, are you even on the best therapy? If you're not on the best therapy, is there something that's better that might work better? So I'll walk you through the patient story that probably best summarizes the goal of Blueberry Pharmacy. So I had a patient early on said to me for her generic medications, husband and wife, a nebulizer, nebulizer solution through their insurance, marketplace insurance, was costing over $100 for a month's supply for the husband. And so with our cost plus model, we were able to get it down to $24 to the member price. We were able to lower the cost on all their generic medications. And so they were very happy. And they said, well, Kyle, what can you do for my Tracebo? It's $100 a month. And I said, well, I can't fill it here.
Their copay was?
Yeah, $100 a month. And I said, well, I can't fill it, but what I can do with you is work with you, your insurance, and your prescriber to find out what might be a better option.
Hmm.
Possibly work better, possibly not, but be cheaper and more affordable so that, because she was considering, you know, cutting down dose or not taking it at all.
Right.
Just like, I can't afford $100 a month. And so I got on a three-way call with her insurance. She's a member, so it justifies my time.
Yeah.
Got on a three-way call with her insurance company, found out that Basaglar was the same tier, but it had a coupon that brought it down to $5 a month. Actually, it was a lower tier. It was a lower tier. So I called the doctor and I said, hey, can we switch this over to Basaglar? I said, send it to this pharmacy. I'll call them and I'll add the coupon to it, make sure it gets adjudicated correctly and make sure it turns out to be $5. And so I did that. The patient picked it up and she said, sure enough, it's $5. And she then started taking it. So within 2 months, she had another A1C done and her A1C had fallen, but still wasn't where it was supposed to be. So the nurse called me and said, hey, I want to add on a GLP-1. What do you think? And I said, well, let's do the same thing again. So we got on a phone call with the insurance, found out that all the GLP-1s were the same tier. And so they were all going to be $50 a month. And so I went searching online again as well. And I found out that Ozempic was going to be $25 for a 3 month supply. Rybelsus was going to be $10 a month. And then all the other ones were much more expensive. So I said, hey, can you start her on Ozempic? It's going to be essentially $25 for a 3 month supply. So she started her on Ozempic and it, you know, got the coupon, called the pharmacy, got it applied, make sure it adjudicated correctly. And, I didn't have to dispense. I didn't have to house any of those medications.
And you didn't have to lose any money from it either.
Didn't have to lose any money. In fact, I made money. It was my medication management fee.
Yeah, you made money.
Which is her membership.
For listeners that aren't in the throes of this, when I say lose, I'm not talking lose because of your time and stuff. I mean, a pharmacy that dispenses that is truly selling that below cost in most cases.
So now we were at a point where her brands, $5 and $25 for, you know, a month, actually are lower than her generic medication costs.
Hmm.
Which kind of frustrates me because I'm like, she's out paying more for her stuff here, but not compared to what she would be through her insurance. And I'm not saying that's how it should work. I mean, in theory, brands should be more than generics. Back to her story. So she comes back, it's like month four after we first met. And she says, you know, I've now lost 10 pounds. My A1C is almost like 8 or just below 8, something like that, down from like 10 or 11. And she said, I'm so much better now. And then the husband said, well, what can you do about my Trelegy? I've not been filling it. And all these questions keep popping up. I thought I had a full profile. Like, I thought I understood their full profile.
Yeah.
Whenever they weren't taking it, they didn't think to tell me about these other medications.
Right.
And so I said, well, you know, you're stage 3 COPD. You should be taking, oh no, he wasn't taking Trelegy. He was taking Breo. But he wasn't taking it. It was costing too much. Because if you think about it, like, they have all these, like, just add up all those costs in your head. That's expensive to be paying every month.
Oh, for sure.
So I said, well, let's talk through this. Why aren't you taking it? And he said, because of cost. I said, tell me about what you're taking it for. He said, COPD. I said, well, what? He said, well, the doctor told me I'm stage 3, whatever that means. And I said, oh, well, that means, yeah, it's pretty bad COPD. So I looked at the COPD guidelines and I realized, well, Breo's okay, but actually Trelegy might even be a better option. And Breo doesn't have a coupon. Trelegy has a coupon, and it actually became free for the patient. Whenever I called the pulmonologist and got it switched to Trelegy, they called in the prescription to the pharmacy. I called the pharmacy, said, apply this coupon. And the patient called 2 days after starting the Trelegy, and he said, Kyle, I can breathe, and I don't need my nebulizer nearly as much as I used to. So now we have the wife that's lost weight, improved her diabetes status, husband who can now breathe, doesn't need to use his nebulizer. That was the most expensive medication, one of the most expensive generic medications before, but because of his consumption has gone down on it, he's now basically not filling it ever because he's on Trelegy now. I tell you the story because that's how I view this model helping patients. A lot of patients are like, my most expensive medications are by brand name medications. You can't help me with those. I say, well, I can, and I can actually maybe help you to where, you know, we either lower the cost on your generics to where it's essentially like saving a brand copay, or maybe there's a way to make your brand less expensive as well, to where this couple, their brand medications were actually cheaper than their generic medications. And so it's just all the idea of medication management versus just the dispensing side of things.
In that situation, because they were a member, did you charge them a consulting brand fee, or is that included? And if it's not included, what do you charge somebody who is a member for that?
After that experience, I did up my cost consultation membership charge because I knew that it wasn't fully justified. That experience showed me that I did a lot more work than what I could charge just a normal member. So I charge patients where I do a more comprehensive, more.
How are you going to be deciding your fees on those cost consultations? Because those can really save people a crap load of money.
I can. And it's kind of like, I don't do it based on percent saved. I actually do it based on the time it took. It goes back to the whole idea of what is the value of my time? What I do in that time, you know, if it's super beneficial for one patient and marginally beneficial for another, as long as they see value in it, that's what's important. So just yesterday I saved a patient $400, you know, and a couple of days before that I saved a patient $6,000. So, but I charged them both the same price. And it goes back to the idea of that's the role of the pharmacist. And it's not so much about.
It's the cleanest way because then they know that you're not trying to bring them down from 4,000 down to, let's say, a dollar. You might go from 4,000 to 3,000 because you know the 3,000 is going to be
better.
$3,000 worth of benefit to them versus a dollar one.
This is how I view savings in healthcare. And this is also why I've stopped tracking how much I save patients to some extent. What am I saving them based off of? If you look at a GoodRx saving, it's based off of AWP or some usual and customary. That is an arbitrary number to begin with. And also, if I save them once, there's not really a future saving. You know what I mean? I can only save them one time. And so that's why it goes back to a medication management fee. It's because I can't charge a percentage of savings each year because it's not like I'm sending them back to CVS to see how much they would be paying.
When you're doing a costing consult, are you charging them up front then saying, I'll look at this, or are you saying I'll charge it if something does come up and then it'll be a flat fee? Or how do you go about that conversation or that marketing of that portion of the business?
Around here, we have a famous lawyer who's famous for his commercials. There's no charge unless we save you money. So I do utilize a similar philosophy because whenever it comes to healthcare, I view if I'm not able to actually save somebody money and they're paying more than they can already pay, I don't want to add to that cost.
So once you find out you're successful, then you'll charge, but it's more of a flat fee for your time then.
Exactly.
And you can tell a lot of these from experience. You're not reinventing the wheel. Right now you might be inventing the wheel, but you're not reinventing it with someone who comes in on insulin, let's say again. You can maybe eyeball it and know kind of what's out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Before you have to dig for 2 hours and not get paid for your time.
A lot of what I'm doing now is based on past research.
Right.
Just kind of being familiar with all the therapies out there, where they fall in the price spectrum, the different strategies to lower those costs. I feel like I have a decent sense now of how that all works.
And then Kyle, when you're involved in that conversation with the pharmacies and the doctor and the coupon and doing this kind of stuff, they don't necessarily have to be none wiser for that, right? I mean, it'd just be like me as a pharmacist helping somebody out and saying, can you transfer this and do this? In other words, they still allow you to play ball, right? Just because you're not necessarily the pharmacist or whatever. People are pretty open to that conversation of saying, well, doctor, can you send this to this pharmacy? And then you call them and that kind of thing. You're welcomed in that area?
Yeah. So it goes back to, I get a lot of questions. I feel like this might answer the question. I get a lot of questions about what do you do with brands? And my response is, well, if I view the future of pharmacy diverging into a generic and then a brand specialty market.
Yeah.
And already we have specialty where it's like, you expect to have to go elsewhere.
Right.
Because of narrow contracting, all of that stuff. So if we kind of fast forward and view it in that mindset, polypharmacy, in the sense of using multiple pharmacies, is an inevitability. And so I view it as, well, I want to be the medication manager for that patient. And whenever I'm controlling 90% of their profile with their generics, I can be a better medication manager than somebody might only be controlling 10%.
Right.
And so that's where I view my role as a community pharmacist, is to manage that 100% by having, you know, direct ties to 90% of the profile.
That's very interesting. Now, Kyle, do you carry any brand in your store?
Insulin. I have a couple of vials. Shingrix.
Is there a stance behind that, or is it just because of the pricing? I mean, what if there was a brand name that was a few bucks or something, but it was still labeled as a brand name, a thyroid or something like that?
I mean, I have Armor. So to me, it's more about a cost threshold.
You're not morally against the brand names or something. They tend to be higher priced.
Yeah, I love brand name. It's just that usually if somebody's, most of my uninsured patients are going to qualify for manufacturer assistance programs or other ways to get their brand name medications. And so, and then the patients that have insurance, well, even if they're high deductible, I still want them putting their brand name medication towards their insurance and then using a coupon to bring down their deductible or something along those lines. So I love brand name medication. In fact, I just had a talk with a rep the other day. I said, wouldn't it just be easier for you guys to go direct to consumer and cut out the coupons, rebates? Like, can't we just negotiate can't we just settle for a lower cost and not have these artificially inflated costs and then charge the employer directly or something like that? Because to me, that seems like the best, like, it sounds like drug companies don't like PBMs just as much as we don't like PBMs. And the PBM model has forced them to have such high copays. If I can get a coupon to make my insulin, granted it's a branded generic, but it's still a Lilly product. But if I can get a coupon to make that insulin $35 for an uninsured patient, why is it $100+ for a Medicare patient?
Right.
It doesn't make sense. So
no,
I don't have anything against brand name medications. I have everything against the model that exists in pricing brand name medications.
Right. Here's one for you. We do not carry any brand names in our pharmacy. And I haven't shared that with anybody before. This is like a confessional with you. We don't carry any brand names.
Any? So like Synthroid?
Period.
Armor?
No. We don't carry anything that is a, what would they call it, a single source?
Yeah.
We don't carry any, period.
Good for you.
Now you and next week's guest and my dog are going to know this now in the future.
When did you make the change?
About 4 months ago. If I'm wrong with this, I was just an old guy that went out of business because I couldn't put up with the changes. If I'm right, I'm a genius. But it wasn't a decision between brand and generics. It was a decision between locking our doors for good or just going all generic. So that's what we did. So the reason I'm bringing this up now is because we're starting to converge on a closed business model. Now, here's where the difference is. We did it while we were still having insurance. So we still have a full gamut of insurance in our pharmacy. And you know enough about the insurance game, and our listeners do, where I can't decide what medicine I'm going to sell to what person. If I don't carry the medicine, I can decide if I'm not going to sell it or not. You know, we don't carry any contraceptives, for example. We don't carry any brand name medicine. I don't carry the specialized $10,000. There's a lot of stuff we don't carry. We've just been talking about that. So happens that we don't carry any brand name medicine. We were forced to do that. But our paths are not that much different because the generics are getting so low in price. People's yearly, deductible and all that is getting so high that it's almost become close to similar. You know, we're seeing a lot more cash. They're not cash patients, but they're paying basically cash for it because it's their deductible. And they don't even give a crap if they hit their deductible. They know they're not going to hit their deductible. So it really comes down to almost our businesses are merging, even though we're insurance and you're not insurance. Mm-hmm. At least that's kind of the way I'm seeing it. And someday I might end up doing what you're doing.
I was going to say, why not just switch? What's holding you back?
I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't had enough time to think about it. Well, I haven't had enough time to think if this is going to be successful. And what I can tell right now, it has been, because our numbers are still a lot higher than I thought they would be without carrying brand name. And I think it goes to what we've been talking about with people already in polypharmacy and the specialized medicines, and they're already going places and things like that. So the important part is I'm not deciding between customers. You know, I truly don't have these medicines in my store. I truly don't have any brand name medicines except a couple that haven't sold all the way down yet.
The reason I see specialty brand going mail order, generics staying local, I can house pretty much all generics into less than 250 square feet and at a inventory cost of less than $8,000. Mm-hmm. And so I can run a pretty efficient process here to where my cost to dispense is less than it costs to mail, basically. Mm. So why have things mail order whenever I have a closer relationship with a physician? Like, think about the things that add time and probably are the most inefficient with mail order is communication with physicians, communication with patients, all of that I have the close proximity with as a retail pharmacy, community retail pharmacy. So
you're saying that is efficient or not efficient?
It is. For me, it's efficient. It's inefficient at a mail order level.
Inefficient for the mail because they're not face-to-face and all that kind of stuff.
They don't have relationships. I can even text some doctors to just say, hey, what do you think about this?
We have the value of using any of the technology they do. We don't have to, though.
Right. Yeah. So I can do a lot of the communication between patients and physicians a lot more efficiently to where there's no point mail ordering generics. The way mail order views community pharmacies is the community pharmacy of the future is just going to be for acute antibiotics and for pain medication. Well, you can't keep lights on with just antibiotics and pain medication.
Right.
But we know that it has to exist. And so I think that there's a place for a community pharmacy for playing a bigger role in the medication management side, dispensing generics and, you know, sticking with the antibiotics and acute stuff. But the brand, why it doesn't make sense for us to carry brand is what you hit on. It's expensive. It's actually, I don't blame insurance companies for wanting to put narrow contracts. They can actually get better negotiation whenever they control on something so expensive, they could negotiate better prices if they're doing their jobs, not just like hiding money themselves, but they could negotiate better pricing if they controlled all the dispensing of those higher cost medications.
For a while, they can try to control it just by screwing people who are able to be screwed, but that's not going to last forever once the pharmacy shut down out of this, you know?
For like a $1,000 brand name medication, it's a lot cheaper to have five of them on the shelf in a mail order versus one on five different pharmacy shelves, because you don't know if the patient that ends up needing that $1,000 brand name medication is going to be in your community or the community over, and then they'll have to order in $1,000 product. And now all of a sudden you still have the five sitting on the shelves in the five individual pharmacies, but mail order, they can just say, you know, we'll just send it out, basically gets there in 2 days. And most brand name medications aren't the acute medications. They're the chronic or they're not something that's needed right away. I can't think of a single brand name medication that's urgently needed. I've never wanted to be a dispenser of specialty medications. The only incentive there was that it at one point had a high profit margin. And I don't think we ever want to view ourselves as going after high profit margin medications anymore.
Let's even say that you make something. A percent matters when you're dealing with stuff that expensive. Let's say you have a medicine that's $10,000. And let's say you're making some minuscule amount, $100. But you look at the $100 and say, yeah, but you know, that would buy Chinese or KFC for my family for the weekend or whatever. Maybe I'll do it. But that $10,000, even if you get paid right away, even if you're not carrying the inventory, there's a ton of other issues, you know, being an audit or giving the wrong medicine to someone and then it walks out the store and you can't take it back. I mean, that's why you have to have the percent involved in those expensive ones. You can't just go by a pretty good looking fee.
I agree. But I don't think that's the role of a community pharmacy. I've never thought that yet.
Our businesses look very close, except I'm taking insurance, you're not, but gradually my customers are using truly less of their insurance, right? Because the deductible's not being hit and it's really coming out of their own pocket, however you slice it. For me, I think it comes down to a marketing thing maybe, and also slash what our cities look like, where I am in the country and so on. Now, I haven't had enough time to think about this because we're into it about 4 months now. It's looking pretty good. But the next step would be something like you've been talking about services and doing this and membership and that kind of thing. If you could give me advice, what would that advice be about the insurances, about saying, screw up?
Don't you already want to say that though?
Oh, for sure I want to do that.
What is holding you back?
What's holding me back is that, let's say that we've got a regular flow of people coming in. We're servicing them. We're doing things similar to what you're doing. Not the same, but getting a little bit closer. But in their mind, we still take their insurance. I don't want to say we're a bait and switch, but it's almost like a comfort level. Like, Well, Mike's Pharmacy is not doing our brand name, but they still take our insurance. But they might sometimes help us with the cash and the deductible and all this stuff that we're talking about. My thought, even though I love marketing and it's intriguing to me, is, and don't get me wrong, I also know that by narrowing something, by saying we're doing what Blueberry is kind of thing, huge value in that of setting yourself apart and this kind of thing. I just haven't figured that out in my head yet. So to your point, yes, I do hate it. What's your next point?
To some extent, it's actually freed me up to have better conversations with people about the role of insurance and why, like, I can't think of how many people I've shared the example of, you know, you don't buy car insurance hoping to get your gas covered. I can also expose PBMs pretty regularly. And a lot of people are just shocked that like the medications cost less or just as much as their insurance would be. And then it opens up that conversation about, well, is your insurance really what you think it is? Or is it, you know, is it doing what it's supposed to do?
It's a positive marketing tool.
I guess to your point, I view it as like, it's a marketing tool in a sense, but from the opposite perspective. Yeah. So like your marketing tool with insurance is that It's kind of the baseline for pharmacy is like every pharmacy accepts insurance. So that helps get patients that way. For me, it's like, well, it definitely has been a challenge because it requires education. It requires education on the provider. It requires education on the patient. But it definitely leads to some interesting conversations. And word of mouth is a great marketing tool.
And I would say that for the first time in history, as each week goes by, in fact, your stuff's making a lot more sense. Because a year ago, I hardly even thought about this. I'm like, well, there's no way I'm going to not do insurance. But now it's like with the deductibles and with the communication and all that kind of stuff, it's starting to make more sense.
Yeah. Once I've heard the idea of you don't buy insurance for low cost, known private things, like something that I've never thought about it this way, but whenever you think about the drugs on our shelves that cost a penny to 10 cents, it is silly to buy insurance for those. And then I have conversations with Medicare patients who say, well, you know, I love my insurance. It makes my copays free. And I'm like, well, if you think about it, it's probably not doing what it's supposed to do then. Because if it's actually paying out for things that already would be $5-$10, is it actually, if you were to go on something high cost unknown, is it actually going to do what you think it's going to do? Because it's probably not. I don't know when that transition happens. I don't know how it happens, but I think that that is kind of the future of pharmacy in the generic and brand specialty divergence.
Boy, we really have almost identical customers, except that mine are from reject insurance customers, helping them out with some cost plus stuff we were talking about earlier and so on, versus you coming right out front. I've never been afraid of doing some marketing, and I guess there's no time better right now than to get out the stuff that you're talking about and becoming the second pharmacy in the nation to do what you're doing, you know?
I do think it's hard. I think it's hard to transition from a traditional model to a model like this. I was asked by a colleague once, do you see the future of Blueberry Pharmacy being more Blueberry Pharmacies or just a transition? And honestly, I see it being more Blueberry Pharmacies than I do a transition. It's very hard to transition.
People starting as Blueberry versus changing from a traditional.
Mm-hmm. The startup costs are so low. Hmm. And the conversion costs are difficult.
This gave me a ton to think about. One of the things I like, I think there are some transition values here. One of them, like for example, with us now, is I could set up some kind of name brand consulting something. You know, now that's like, I've washed my hands of it. Now it's like, hey, we're going to give honest answers for everybody who's got name brand questions and maybe needs to save some money on them and stuff like that. So that's a fascinating thing right there.
My friend, who's actually going to be buying into the pharmacy shortly, he regularly challenges me with the question of, is it all just about cost? Because we don't want to just be, you know, race to the bottom. And my response is, it's initially about cost. Until we have a change of mindset. So pretty much every conversation I have with a patient, whether clinical or cost, it all starts around cost. But it quickly becomes clinical. So thinking back to that story I shared about the husband and wife, they initially came to me regarding the cost of their medications, but it became a full-on CMR.
Absolutely.
It became an MTM session. So, and that's the other thing, from a clinical perspective, we have adherence metrics, we have quality of care metrics. To some extent, those are all cost questions as well. And so I'll highlight a couple. So like people ask me about, what about adherence? What do you do about adherence? And my response is, well, I care if the patient is taking the medication. I don't care how many pills I get because especially around the membership model.
Right.
I'm not driven by refills. My goal isn't to get them a refill. My goal is to make sure they're on the right therapy and actually taking it correctly to get the benefit from it. But I don't need that refill. So I don't need to be chasing refills. So yeah, I do care about their adherence, but it's more from a, is this working for you? And if not, why not? Like, what side effects are you having? A lot of what I do comes down to the philosophy that healthcare is only effective if the patient can afford it. And so, and the other thing I've thought about recently is we have a lot of power to improve a patient's health as healthcare providers, pharmacists, but we also have a lot of power to financially burden patients. And so I think about a lot of what I do from those perspectives. I just was dealing with a patient that has $750,000 of medical debt and still has high cost prescription drugs. And so
I'm driven a lot by financial status as a fifth health indicator. So we have the vital signs, and I view financial ability as one of those vital signs. If a patient can't afford the medications they're given, they're not going to take them, or they're going to take them incorrectly. And so we as pharmacists have to play a role there. And I think even valuing CMRs, MTM, I've always been curious. A lot of the studies use our impact, our recommendations, and puts a dollar sign on, you know, cost of hospital visit avoided or exacerbation of asthma avoided. I've not actually seen studies that actually take into account direct cost savings for a patient. How much could we save a patient directly even before those actuarial numbers? Like I'm convinced that we can actually save a lot more. Whenever I work with patients to get them on manufacturer assistance programs, and I immediately eliminate, you know, $6,000 a year of medical spend, and not to mention that they're actually now taking the therapy, they might now have avoided a hospitalization. So that's on top of that.
For sure.
But I think there's a lot that can be said about the clinical side of things whenever you start focusing on the patient's financial side of things as well.
Maybe the average pharmacist who's making the average pharmacist amount of money has surpassed Maslow, you know, hierarchy, and they're making above 60,000 or something. Maybe 10 bucks doesn't matter quite as much because it's like a savings, like, well, okay, get this download on Kindle or whatever. But for the people who are talking between eating that day and medicine, well, eating is going to come first. Their needs are way different from ours. I don't think a lot of our listeners can appreciate. I can't. I think a lot of people can't really appreciate that.
No, it's true. Yeah. I mean, it really opened my eyes whenever the wife basically said, I can't afford insulin. To 4 months later when she had a whole different outlook on her diabetes.
Exactly. The focus is different.
It was a complete, like, that's what made me say, oh, it's more than just cost. So cost is what brings them into the door. It's how they hear about us. But it's more actually about what all we do beyond that. It's even resonated with doctors now as well. So doctors refer patients not just about cost, but also, you know, what's the best insulin for my patient to be on? What's the best GLP-1 for my patient to be on? It's first about cost, but then it's also about, you know, well, which is actually clinically the best one for their patient to be on? So I've gotten a lot of referrals from physicians and possibly more to come on the physician side of things from a service standpoint for this type of model. Whenever I say, will it be successful? From a monetary side, I'm pretty sure. But from a, like a feeling like it's the right thing to do, I'm like, definitely. But what I have to remind myself from a money side of things too, is like, this is recurring. And as long as I don't lose a member, and I'm averaging a new member a day. And so even if I have a low attrition rate, 20% or something, I had to remind myself that even though I'm only averaging a new member a day, that we're coming up on a year now. So memberships will start renewing. And so,
right.
So yes. You know, it feels like not much money right now, like as that compounding effect takes hold. And as long as I am committed to, you know, providing the best care for the members and they don't want to leave, it has to be sustainable at some point.
And here's the thing. I'm looking around like everybody's looking at me, but I'm just so used to the PBMs, you know, on your back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No one's trying to kidnap them from you, really, and forcing them to somewhere else.
It's the other payer in healthcare that is often forgot about that I'm dealing directly with. It's the true payer in healthcare too. If you make a connection with the true payer of healthcare, and as long as you're not ridiculously priced,
right,
there's no incentive to necessarily leave, because even if they could, at my prices, even if they could get a dollar less somewhere else, it then becomes more about the service.
I just got to tell you this last thing about your height. We get broken into about every 2 years or so. And actually, they caught these guys. There's three guys out of Detroit in the DEA I met with the other day, and they happened to have caught these guys. But our last burglary, these guys didn't get in because when they were stopped by the DEA about a month ago, not apprehended, just stopped, they stole all their saws and stuff out of their car. And our windows, we've got this special glass, you know, that's got this like shield in it that you can't break it. You have to actually saw through it with like a hacksaw kind of thing. So in this last one, the DEA made these guys start over. So they were like going old school with sledgehammers, you know? So we have a video of this guy taking like 32 hits at the back of our window.
Yeah.
The glass company comes out. And this glass takes a long time to order, apparently. It's been a few weeks now already because it's specialized, you know. So, thankfully, the glass company said, hey, listen, instead of putting wood, like a paneling up here, we can just put on like a covering on this so you can still see your window, but it's going to be safe. Because the window, it shattered, but it never fell out, okay, because of the special glass. So, they've got these shields up there.
Yeah.
And so, you can see this beautiful broken glass, you know, on two windows when you come up. It looks like God's frost painting, you know, on a cold winter morning, except that it's broken glass from some convict. Anyway, it's been like 3 weeks and everybody comes in and asks about the damn thing. And I never thought something like that would bother me. So I've got like my story down already and I kind of switch it a little bit. And then I throw the DEA and I decide who I want to tell what to and all that. But it's just, you know, you kind of smile and, you know, it's a little conversation piece.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about you, Kyle. I knew you were a tall gentleman. I read on your actual website, you have something that, yes, I am tall. Yes, I played basketball, things like that. And I'm thinking, I've put up with this for 3 weeks now. And I said, thank God I'm not Kyle.
Yes, yes. How tall are you?
Because of your height, I can live my life answering about the window for another week or two.
I really want to say, whenever somebody says, did you play basketball? I want to say, are you a horse jockey?
Yeah, you should. Or switch categories. Their first thought of you is tall, but your first thought of them might be they're kind of a squatty fat lady. And just ask them how much they weigh. Well, Kyle, my gosh, the whole world's watching. You're like the Truman Show. I mean, every pharmacist who has badmouthed the PBM, and so thus every pharmacist, is watching you and learning from you. So thanks for being on the show.
Oh, certainly. Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of the show, as you can tell. So appreciate all you do. You get some great guests on here. So I hope that I can live up to some of the other episodes as well.
You will. Hey, do me a favor. If you can, maybe even pay someone for this. Go through all the episodes and listen to them again. Try to get at least one quote from me. Okay. All right, Kyle. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.